Five, four, three, two, one.
What's the situation, Captain?
This is Situation Fluxus, a weekly one-hour program focused on jazz and improvised music, news, radio, conversations, and more. Thank you for tuning in to Situation Fluxus on WGXC 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears in upstate New York. I'm your host, Cheryl Kay. Let us dig into the headlines. Performing this evening, Thursday, March 31st, vocalist Kristen Lee Sergeant at Joe's Pub in New York City. For more information, publictheater.org. Also this evening at The Stone in New York City, drummer, vibraphonist, and composer Chez Smith previews his forthcoming Pyroclastic Records release, Interpret It Well. This precedes his solo performance tomorrow night, April 1st, and a quintet performance on Saturday, April 2nd. For more information, thestonenyc.com. This Friday and Saturday night, April 1st and 2nd, at the Jazz Forum in Tarrytown, New York, the Lewis Hayes Quartet for two sets. And on Sunday, April 3rd, for two sets, vocalist Eugenie Jones celebrates the release of her new album, Players. For more information, jazzforumarts.org. The Hudson Area Library in Hudson, New York, hosts the Michael Benedict Jazz Vibes Quartet in conjunction with Jazz Appreciation Month, a music festival held every April in the United States in honor of jazz as an early American art form. The quartet performs straight-ahead jazz as well as Latin-influenced jazz, including the bossa nova and samba. For more information, hudsonarealibrary.org. The Michael Leonhardt Orchestra performs at the Falcon in Marlborough, New York, on Sunday, April 3rd. For more information, liveatthefalcon.com. At Birdland in New York City, inside of Birdland Theater tonight, Thursday, March 31st, through Saturday, April 3rd, saxophonist Harry Allen and his quartet, and on Wednesday, April 6th, guitarist Frank Bignola's Guitar Night featuring John DiMartino. And inside of Birdland Jazz Club, on Sunday, April 3rd, the world premiere of trombonist Ed Neumeister's Ensemblage Jazz Orchestra. For more information, birdlandjazz.com. Pianist Yanov Tobenhaus is on tour in support of his new solo release, Hope, on Fresh Sound New Talent Records. On Sunday, April 3rd, he's with Deanna Kirk's Quartet at Mesro Jazz Club in New York City. For more information, yanovtobenhaus.com. Saxophonist and composer Randall Despremier and pianist and composer Jason Yeager perform opposite pianist Jacob Sachs and vocalist Yoon Sun Choi at Whale Recital Hall of Carnegie Hall in New York City on Wednesday, April 6th, as part of the annual Sophia Rosev Concert Series. For more information, carnegiehall.org. And now for new releases. Pianist Satoko Fuji and bassist Joe Fonda's Thread of Light on FSR. Drummer Matt Slocum's With Love and Sadness on Sunnyside. Percussionist Vasco Trilla's Acoustic Mask on 577. Guitarist Quentin Angus's The State of Things on Outside in Music. Trombonist Carl Silvera's self-release A Porta Aperta. Bassist Andre Vaught's Dusk on Vaught Music. And guitarist Mike Murray's self-released Horizon. All news items have been gathered from various media sources. For the latest updates, contact the source venue, or business. Remember, I'm just the messenger. My guests are saxophonist, educator, and composer Colin Walters and guitarist Nick Zavaglia, both with a connection to the University of Connecticut. Colin is a UConn grad who earned his Master of Music and Jazz Studies degree from Juilliard last June, and Nick is a senior at UConn, majoring in jazz studies and minoring in entrepreneurship. Both were students of Earl MacDonald, a professor and director of jazz studies at the University of Connecticut. So thank you both for joining me here on Situation Fluxus.
Thank you for having us.
I spoke with three UConn seniors in February. Now, Nick, I'm speaking with you a month closer to graduation than them at the time. What are some things that you need to get done yesterday to graduate?
Yesterday?
Are you one of those? Are you a graduating senior who's got it all together and everything's on time? All your papers are in, and
I'm just currently in the process of trying to complete all my schoolwork for the semester. I think it's really important to keep in mind that I have to take things one step at a time. So it's very easy for me to get overwhelmed by some of the schoolwork I get, but. All in all, I just hand in everything in time and, make sure I'm working with my professors to make sure that I'm on track to graduate. And that's all that matters, really.
Good man. Good man. And when is your recital and what are you playing? Can you tell us?
Well, I would probably have to have a recital probably next semester. I did have some issues with pacing my courses so that way I can graduate in a timely fashion. Obviously COVID hasn't made that very easy for me to work on, but I have played in a number of recitals last semester and this semester. In fact, I'm actually playing a recital on Tuesday.
Okay. So Colin, what cool-headed advice can you give a fellow UConn student who's about to graduate?
Absolutely. The biggest thing is just take it all in as much as possible. Try to enjoy all the moments. Now being out several years now, I remember very fondly of my memories there in the music building, my memories going to the dining hall, the social interaction, being around so many musicians and artists and people. It's kind of hard now to do that. So you want to have a rehearsal, you obviously have to pay people to come and play and come to the rehearsal, whereas you have your friends there, you can be giving out new music, you can be performing, you can be socializing. And I think that is the biggest thing to just try to soak all that up, all that in, all the connections with professors, because it definitely pays dividends as you progress and you leave school.
Yeah. We never paid each other to play each other's recitals. It was usually like a sub, buy a submarine sandwich at the local sandwich shop, and that would do, because every college student is hungry all the time,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
Colin, with an undergrad and graduate degree in hand, you have a website, colinwaltersmusic.com, and an active involvement in numerous ensembles in Connecticut and elsewhere. How would you describe where your music career is at this moment?
I feel like my music career at this moment is starting to blossom, is starting to reach this point where I'm able to meld my two loves. I love performing as much as I love teaching. And I'm finding myself kind of in this middle section where I'm able to say I perform in New York City, and then the next day be able to perform a masterclass or to work with students before, like a pre-concert talk, or having opportunities to have a wide variety of musicians, artists, and people come to my performances. that's kind of where I'm seeing my music go in this fashion. And I guess one of the plus sides of the pandemic in this period of time where we were all at home is having the opportunity to write a lot of original music, having the opportunity to connect with musicians virtually, you know, having able to have conversations and to share ideas. And I think that's, for me, I'm starting to build that that digital platform, that the social media following around my music, because I that's what we've been seeing is kind of the future. To get your music out there, you don't necessarily have to play 300 shows a night if you can also do that and get your music onto YouTube, onto Instagram. I feel like people are using TikTok now as like the newest thing. And really, I'm interested in trying to do some like duet with me. So I'll play some patterns and then get people to interact with my music that way. So I'm really open to all the new opportunities that are ahead of me and seeing how much I can just get my music out into the world.
And Nick, where do you see yourself in the next year, career-wise? What are you thinking about?
So I've definitely spent a lot of time thinking about what my plans would be for the future. But I would say in the next year, you know, I expect myself to be graduated with school at this point. I only have about a semester left, so that should be pretty much in the near future. But I've also spent a lot of time thinking about, you know, where I should go as far as, you know, where I should work or, you know, should I go closer to the city or which city should I go towards? So I've definitely spent a lot of time thinking about places to go, and I'm definitely looking at moving as close as I can to New York City, because generally, I mean, if there's one concentration of as many artists as humanly possible, then, you know, I would want to be part of that as well. Because really, I mean, you get to share your music and your ideas with everybody else. And if you can have some sort of collective think about these new ideas and stuff, and that's really, you know, what's important is the trade-off of ideas. So, you know, I would probably see myself moving closer to the city and definitely trying to look for work and look for other people to play with.
Yeah. Nick, have you explored putting some of your performances or even talking about your instrument, the guitar, on YouTube or TikTok?
Absolutely. You know, I've definitely toyed with the idea of making social media and just posting, you know, like just ideas for like a practice routine or just bringing the world up to speed on what tunes I might be working on or, you know, if I have any pictures from a recent gig that I played, then, you know, I could put that on my my social media as well. Yeah, you know, it's just a way for me to let the world know what I'm working on. And I don't see why it wouldn't be a bad idea. In fact, I have a friend of mine who, you know, he does that posting on TikTok, and, you know, he gets a pretty good number of views on some of those videos. So
let's revisit your undergraduate years, you two. What course was it that made you realize that the jazz and improvised music life was for you? Let's hear from Colin.
I think my first course would be, it was the jazz combo. And the year I was there, there were five freshman jazz students. And Professor McDonald put us all in the combo together. And it was a classic quintet. We played a lot of Art Blakey. We played just a lot of even Professor McDonald's compositions. But it was a great opportunity to be around other hungry jazz musicians my age in this one group, and we were all learning and developing together, and we grew a lot. And I think from the first couple rehearsals, I just knew this was the path that I wanted to continue on. And we actually stayed together as an ensemble through my whole time there. So it was really awesome to just build and grow up together, really, musically and personally.
And Nick?
Oh, I would say my answer has to be pretty much the jazz combos as well. Yeah, definitely my first semester in that music program, you know, I got put in this combo with Professor Doug Mayer, who's also my guitar teacher. And, you know, we spent a lot of time rehearsing and learning tunes. But the thing that really kind of turned me on to the whole idea of improvisation and jazz and, you know, made me really think that I wanted to do this was my drummer for that combo in that semester always talked about these jam sessions at this bookstore in downtown Storrs. So I said, okay, he was like, you know, we should probably go to these jam sessions because it's a great way to learn tunes and you get to hang with the other combos as well. So I said, okay, well, I think I might go to those. So, you know, the first time I went there, it was like, for me, it was a total disaster because I didn't know enough tunes and I honestly had no idea what I was doing. But I kept learning all these new tunes and stuff, and I kept, hanging around other musicians from the different combos. And then next thing you know, I'm like, you know, pulling over changes and I'm getting to hang out with a bunch of really talented musicians. And, you know, it was such a great learning experience. And, you know, it's definitely my favorite part about school. And it still is my favorite part about school.
Mm. Colin, from your purview as a working musician, and Nick, from yours as a soon-to-be music graduate, what in the jazz and improvised music performance world do you feel could use a change, a reset, a refresh, whatever word you'd like to use? Is it the rate of pay, more informal jam sessions at clubs, more education on the business side of performance?
Absolutely. I would say the business side of performance would be a big aspect of improvement, but even breaking that down even more, when you go to these jam sessions, I think there's a level of, there can be moments or periods of time where it's like the cutting contest. Who's the better musician? Who's, you know, I know more notes than you. I think if there's a way to reimagine that type of culture, to make it more inclusive, to make it a space where people are invited to come. I know that there's some jam sessions that have set up ways where here's a sign-up list, and if your name's on the list, you get to play. And it kind of eliminates a little bit of the cutting aspect. That's the biggest thing that has been around a part of the culture, a part of the jam session scenes, that people have made comments of that it's a rite of passage, but I don't necessarily think that's the right thing going forward in just where we are today and where people are coming from. You trying to meet everybody where they're at and then progress together. And again, all of that has nothing to do with the music. And really that's what we should be here all about. So from my purview, I that would be one of the big things that I would want to change. And when I do host jam sessions or have the opportunity to interact with musicians, I'm at least trying to give off that that energy in those spaces. And I'm hoping, you know, that catches on to more people.
Mm. And Nick?
Yeah, I mean, definitely jam sessions are, it could be very interesting how, there could be an emphasis also on just like having a lot of chops and being able to like play really hard tunes. But I think what's also really interesting about like jam sessions versus actual like jazz gigs is that, you know, especially since I'm in college too, you know, I'm a music student. So it's oftentimes it's very impressive when, you know, someone calls a tune like Giant Steps or like Moments Notice, like a Coltrane tune that's known for having really hard changes, and you could play over that. So that's cool if you have the chops to do that. But I mean, you know, and when I go on a gig or something and I have to play like a Cocktail Hour, you know, most people are looking for like a Girl from Ipanema instead. So it's funny because like there's this distinction between like jam session tunes where it's like Giant Steps, you know, 320 BPM and just blazingly fast. And then there's Girl from Ipanema, 120, like just so much more just easygoing. And you know, maybe you have a singer there singing the lyrics, either in English or in the Brazilian Portuguese. But it's really weird because like there's sort of like this, especially in college, it was like a fascination with chops, but really, like, it's more about just playing melodically and, you know, just also just associating with musicians who, you know, care a lot about the music. And, you know, I always like to think about being more forward thinking and trying to, you know, progress jazz or just any type of music, really.
All right. For this last question, it's really not about what I want to know, but what you two want to know. So, Nick, if you have a question for Colin, Colin, if you have a question for Nick or comments for each other, think about it for a second, and then one of you ask the other or say something to the other.
When you mentioned that the fact that the jam sessions still exist, that in the bookstore, I remember when it was like in the bottom, it was a cafeteria in the chemistry building. It was in the student union. And we tried, like, we even started the there was like a jazz student club or student union or something like that. And we tried so hard. We had limited people. And for me, years later, to now see how much the program has grown, how many more people are on faculty, it feels great because I know it's going in the right direction. And just hearing about your experience has been a pleasure this morning. And I hope we get to play together if there's a way to put that together. I'm down in the New York City, Connecticut, lower Connecticut area. So this is the place to be. You don't necessarily have to live in New York to be in New York, but you know.
That's true. That's true. I'm originally from Milford myself. So
nice.
Yeah, it's not too far away from the city. I mean, nowadays the jam sessions are harder to come by on campus now because COVID obviously makes it very difficult. But before COVID, I mean, there was jam sessions at the bookstore, the Barnes and Nobles and downtown stores, and you know, we'd use the stage that they had in the back. I think it was like part of the puppetry theater, mm-hmm. I think. So we'd have those jam sessions there. Sometimes Earl would come. That was the coolest because, you know, instead of playing piano, he'd play trumpet, which is, it's very interesting seeing, you know, like jazz musicians sort of double. Mm-hmm. But I mean, we also, in recent years, we just started up the UConn Jazz Cats. It's a college club where, you know, we like to teach tunes and, you know, there's also, we get the chance to kind of play with people who are interested in playing jazz or already play jazz. And, you know, you have like a varying degree of people who are like trying to get into jazz and just want to learn about it. And, you know, you have people who've been playing and they've been in the music program and they're looking at grad school. Mm-hmm. So it's really cool because just the way it's progressed in recent years, there's a lot more opportunities to get together and play. Of course, there would be more if COVID, you know, weren't a thing. But I think it's definitely trended in the right direction. And I'm very excited and curious to see how the Jazz Cats holds after I leave school and how the music program, you know, builds itself. So yeah, it's been a very interesting few years.
For more information on Colin Walters, colinwaltersmusic.com. And for more information on the University of Connecticut, uconn.edu. And now for some music.
Beginning when we should have parted, never started again. Who knows why this time? Too much talking. too much wine. Ever after never came. Stalemate ends all our games. Set them up and reframe. Pushing that rock up that hill. Pushing that rock.
That was jazz and R&B performer Hope Diamond. We listened to Trouble Man from her 2021 self-released release, Awaken. She currently is performing with the Paul McDonald 17-piece big band out of Los Angeles, California. And we started off the set with Sisyphus, a selection from vocalist Kristen Lee Surgeon's February release on Tiger Turn Records titled Falling. Jeb Patton on piano, Hannah Marks on bass, Jay Sawyer on drums, Jody Redhage Ferber on cello, and Ted Nash on soprano sax. She performs this evening at Joe's Pub in New York City. For more information, publictheater.org. You're listening to Situation Fluxus on WGXC 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears. I'm your host, Cheryl Kay. Please send your comments, quips, and anecdotes, as well as feedback to thejazzdisturbance@gmail.com, info@wgxc.org, feedback@wgxc.org, or leave a 3-minute message at area code 518-291-WGXC. Our website is wgxc.org.
Hi, I'm Sharp Radway, pianist, composer, arranger, and author. And you're with Cheryl Kay, host of Situation Fluxus, on WGXC 90.7 FM, radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia counties of New York.
My interview is with singer, songwriter, producer, and legacy activist Eugenie Jones. Her new self-produced release is titled Players on her Open Mic Records. She performs this Sunday, April 3rd, at the Jazz Forum in Tarrytown, New York.
Right here. I've got rhythm, I've got music, I've got my man. Who can ask for anything more? I've got daisies in green pastures, and I've got my man who could ask for anything more. Old man Trouble, I don't mind him. You won't find him around my door. Cause I've got starlight, and I've got sweet dreams, and I've got my man who could ask for anything more, 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 more. Hey!
So thank you so much for joining me here on Situation Fluxus.
Thank you, Cheryl. I'm happy to be here.
Pianists James Weedman and Lynn Seaton, bassists Reggie Workman and Lonnie Plaxico, drummer Bernard Purdy, and percussionist Bobby Sanabria. Was this a wish list of players for your new release titled Players?
Well, you know, if it wasn't, it should have been. I mean, when I first started out, I had no idea who the players were going to be. I just had a concept. I knew some of the foundational pieces that I wanted, but it developed as the work developed. Mm. Yeah.
Hailing from New York, Dallas, Chicago, and Seattle, how did you pull 32 musicians together over 4 years of producing this release?
Yes. You know, it's one of those things where if you knew it was going to be as hard as it ultimately ended up being, you wonder if you would have took it on in the first place. But when I started out, I wanted to record in each region of the United States because I felt like I wondered to myself, would the music be different if I went to each of the different regions of the country? And within each of those regions, I tried to connect to, you know, world-class musicians. And I was very successful in being able to do that. But my thinking was, I wonder what it would be like to experience it from a geographical perspective. And I also wondered what it would be like to pull all that music together into one CD and how would it contrast and compare to one another. And so that was kind of my thinking and going into it. But the launch that really got it started was a gig that I did in Dallas. It was a corporate gig. And I went there. And as I was going there, I thought, wow, it'd be really cool. This is one of the regions. If I could connect with the musicians there that were going to perform with me for this performance, maybe they could also too be the ones that I record with. And that became the paradigm that I executed going forward. Get a gig, hire the musicians, perform, rehearse with them, and then lastly, go into the studio with them. So we basically had three bites at the apple before we actually recorded the music.
Wow, 32 musicians. That's a lot of apples.
I know. Some of them taste better than others, but it was all good.
In working with 32 different musicians in about 4 different places in this country, what was one of the highlights? What was one of the funny moments that you can remember?
Okay, so Reggie may not like me telling this, but oh my gosh, Reggie Workman is absolutely incredible. Not just as a musician, as a human being, he's incredible. So we were recording in New York, and I was just so thrilled to find out this simpatico thing between he and I, because before I was doing this, I also was a fitness and wellness columnist for a newspaper, wrote for 19 years. And so there's information out there for me. I'm really involved in fitness and wellness, and I still practice even though I don't write about it. So anyway, we're getting ready to start recording this session. Everybody's in the meeting room talking. We're all breaking out, getting ready to go to our individual spots. Reggie drops to the floor and starts doing push-ups. Right there. I lie not. I was like, oh my gosh, where's my freaking camera? Wait. I'm like, wait, Reggie, let me cut. He's like, don't you take any pictures of that. I was so absolutely just over the top. I mean, he's a mature man and he's still taking care of his body. So I was thrilled to see that. But then also to know that he and I had this in common, fitness and being well and taking care of your body. I was just thrilled to see that too. So that was one of my high points. That was definitely one of my high points.
That is gold. I love it. Yeah. I'm taking it. Awesome.
Red dress on, don't get in my way. It's gonna be a take no prisoners day. Leaping tall buildings in
a single bound, dropping old and young men's jaws to the ground. When I got my red dress on, the power's mine. Feel it coursing through all my veins, boardroom, bedroom, beyond. I play to win with the finesse only a woman can wield. Morning contemplation, standing at my closet door. I am choosing the look that defines how I feel. When confidence is the rule for the day, you'll find me wrapped in red in a pair of Jimmy Choo. Red lipstick too. Baby, baby, got my red dress on. Don't worry, baby, I only use these powers for good. But baby, baby, got my red dress on. Don't worry, baby, I only use these powers for good.
Have an upcoming performance at the Jazz Forum in Tarrytown, New York on Sunday, April 3rd. Who's in the band and what can the audience expect to hear?
I am so excited about that gig. It's going to be hard to contain myself. I have a really corny sense of humor. I love having fun. And I'm telling you, the guys that are in the band, we're going to bring it. We are going to bring it. So all I can say is, come prepared to have some wonderful music and some laughs and some fun. And I will be in your face making sure you're having fun. Bobby Sanabria is on drums. Lonnie Plaxico is on bass. Jason Yeager is on piano. Jason wasn't on my recording, but he was involved in arranging some of the songs. And he is a well-established New York musician as well. So between the four of us, it's going to be a blast. Yeah, it's been interesting to watch Jason's career grow over the years. I performed with him in Baltimore at Hartford Community College in their jazz series. And it's been about 4 years ago. And that's how I first met Jason. And since that time, we've worked together on a few of my song arrangements. He's always done a spectacular job. And when I started coming to New York to perform, I hired him. So this will be our third or so performance together in New York.
For someone who has always been engaged with music, but who didn't begin a singing career until later in life, what were some latent musical abilities that you discovered?
That's a really great question, because I found that answer profound to me as well. So for instance, I write my own songs. I never wrote songs before I started performing and singing in 2011. I'd never written songs before. And I wondered to myself, where did that come from? But I have memories of sitting in the kitchen at the kitchen table doing my homework, and my mother would be in the kitchen cooking, and she was always singing when she was doing anything around the house. And she was humming one time. And I remember asking her, "That's beautiful, Mom. What song is that?" And she said, "Oh, nothing. That's just something I made up." And so I think about that now, the fact that I'm writing songs and it's a part of her. It was always a part of her. I originally got involved in singing because she died from cancer, and I was trying to work my way through that grieving process and asking myself, can I carry on some part of her? Can I carry on that part of her? And that's how I first got started in singing and performing, was in response to that. And now, flashing back at various latent things that were happening in my life when I was a child, they reflect now in my music without me even knowing that I was recording that stuff to pull out and use later.
Let's talk about travel. In your bio at eugeniejones.com, you talk about, quote, traveling toward a vision. Would you please tell us what you've experienced toward that vision?
You know, one thing I can tell you that I experienced was the practice of persevering and grit. And I love that word. I've always loved that word. I felt like that was something that was carried forward from my childhood, because this experience was challenging and it was always meant to be a challenge for me. I'm very goal oriented. I like putting bullseyes out in front of myself and then figuring out how I'm going to get there. I want to be challenged because I feel like that will bring me to maturity in terms of my gifts and abilities, but it'll also give me something to be excited about and to pursue, as opposed to just doing the same old thing that you've always done. This project is my third project. I've recorded twice before and gotten accolades around those recordings, but this couldn't be what I've already done. What's the purpose of that? This has to be an evolution of me as an artist, an evolution of experiences. And I knew that if I had traveled all these places, interacted with all these people, that there were going to be just moments that would just inspire me and make me a better person in the process. So it's not just about the music. It's about you evolving in the process of the music.
Mm-hmm. A lot tied into that. A lot. Wow. Music, community, legacy. I pulled that right from your bio, right from your website.
Yes.
You've used your gifts and skills as a singer, an entrepreneur, and activist to better your community in Seattle, Washington. What are some of the positive effects you've witnessed happen in your community and upon participants involved in the projects you've become involved in?
Mm-hmm. So there are a lot. And I am, first of all, I've got to say, I'm blessed and I'm very happy to have been a catalyst in these things happening. So the Jackson Street Jazz Walk is a festival that I've produced for the past 3 years. And Celebrating Ernestine Anderson is a legacy project that I co-produced with Styx Hooper and some supporters within our community. And each of those events, they did a number of things. One, it gave artists in our community, some of them who don't get a chance to perform as much as they'd like to, it gave them a platform to perform and it paid them for their work. That's important. Secondly, it brought music, live music, into venues up and down this area of central Seattle, which is historically a very important area because it's where Quincy Jones, Ray Charles, Ernestine Anderson went to high school, honed their skills, and became and developed who they were before they launched out across the world. So we're trying to, legacy-wise, commemorate that and keep it alive and relevant in people's lives. Because if you don't talk about it, if you don't tell these stories, people forget. They forget, and children lose the opportunity to see those people came before me. They look like me. They're brown like me. They came from these same communities. I can do this too. If they did it, I can do it. So that was important in terms of legacy, remembering our history and motivating our youth. And then also it brought entrepreneurial opportunities to businesses. We brought customers into those businesses to watch those live performances, and they paid money for food and drink, and it benefited those businesses. It also, most importantly, at the end of the day, this is hard work for me as an organizer. It's like project management on steroids. And when I lay my head to my pillow at night, I want to know that all this work meant something, that it really mattered. And for me, that means giving back to my community. So every time I do something, I want it to have some kind of community give back, either financially or in kind. And as a result, we donated food to the Northwest Harvest, which feeds the hungry in Seattle, 600 pounds of food and some cash on the side. We also made a sizable check to the Boys and Girls Club to support their basketball program. We made a $3,000 donation to the Central Area Senior Center's meal delivery program during COVID so that they could actually go out and deliver these meals to people's homes who were just basically locked down because they couldn't go anywhere. And we also have done things for teen homeless centers that actually cater to teens and try to address their needs to get them into careers and give them shelter rather than sleeping on the streets. So music, business, legacy, community, all those things are wrapped up into my music. And it matters to me because of all those things.
As we come to the end of this interview, I want to give you the last word. You've got an upcoming performance. You've spoken about that. You've talked about your advocacy work in Seattle, Washington. What else would you like to tell us?
I want to tell people that more than anything, I am a heartfelt communicator. Everything about my life has been about communication, written, verbal, singing. And what I really want you to know is listen to my music, hear the lyrics. They're not just standards. They're my words from my heart. There's messages of inspiration, encouragement, love. There's fun. There's sassiness. There's something in there for everyone. So I want you to go and listen to it. Find it on Bandcamp, download the CD, support my music, support my projects, and also come out and see me while I'm in New York. Let these venues know, hey, bring her back. She brought an audience. So come out, come on out and support me so I can get another gig too. Cause it's not all about me, me, me.
For more information, EugenieJones.com.
Some things only misery can grow. Some truths only pain show. Your love costs more than I can pay, so I'm letting go, but not easily. My mind says it's over, my heart says through, but my body is slow getting over you. So here in the dark, while sleep won't come, I'm counting one more night. One more night to burn, burn, burn. One more night to twist and turn. One more night to scream in my dreams. One more night to
thank you for tuning in to Situation Fluxus on WGXC 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears. I've been your host, Cheryl Kay. Tune in next Thursday at 10 a.m. for another show. I also host the Jazz Disturbance on the 1st, 2nd, 3rd, and 5th Sunday of each month from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. To contact us about Situation Fluxus, thejazzdisturbance@gmail.com or info@wgxc.org. We appreciate your feedback. Feedback@wgxc.org or leave a 3-minute message at area code 518-291-WGXC. Thank you.